And a very good morning to you. Thank you very much for your time. It's always a pleasure just being in your company. If there's anything you'd like to talk about, you know what to do. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give us a call and talk about the issues you think we should be delving into. One of the key issues we will be looking at is the city of Cape Town apparently not opening up some of the halls so that SASSA can get grants to people on time. And what's happened is people in the Easter River area are sleeping outside early as 1 o'clock in the morning to try and get services. It is disgusting, right? I don't give a hoot who the person in charge is. We need to understand that government officials aren't kings and queens. They're blinking public servants, and we'll remind them of that. So we will be chatting to the city of Cape Town. It'll be interesting to hear what they have to say about those halls, and we'll get them on with the executive director of SASSA in the Western Cape. So that'll be coming up. But another issue that I'd like to turn my attention to, and there was a News 24 story, by the way. We were supposed to have paid 500 million rand, I think it was, for our COVAX payment. This is an initiative to see developing countries also get their equitable share, and it looks like we have missed the deadline to pay. Now, Dr. Anban Pillay, former DG, that he's in charge of all of this, has basically said that there's still discussions with Treasury around it. That's all I can say. I asked Anban to join us. He says, listen, he's going to be in a meeting. He should be done by 9:30, 9:46. He's still not answering his phone. But we are joined by Fatima Hassan, head of HJI. And the reason I've got Fatima on is because they have, the Health Justice Initiative, have been pushing government to tell us about what they're doing in order to make sure that we get our equitable share of this vaccine. So, Fatima, great having you on the show.
Hi, Kino. Great to be on.
So, let's talk to me. Talk to me a little bit about your efforts. And let me reverse that question. First, talk to me about HJI and the work that you guys do, and then let's talk about the requests that you've put to government re the COVID-19 vaccine.
Thanks. So, yeah, in the middle of a pandemic, we decided to launch a new initiative because I think what everybody realized was that COVID just exposed all the fault lines in our society.
Yeah.
I mean, you just talked earlier about the socioeconomic crisis that's hitting South Africa. And so that's really the reason why I decided to form the Health Justice Initiative to look at the intersection of race and inequality in access to healthcare services. And so initially, obviously, we'll be focusing on COVID-19, but you know, primarily its intersection with HIV, TB, and cancer. Mm. So I'm sure you've seen the reports that in 106 countries, 85% of those countries had a major disruption on health services because of COVID-19. Yes. So not just because of the socioeconomic crisis, but also because of restrictions of movement, so people can't access their treatment, or they can't go to clinics, or they can't get proper healthcare support. So the idea really is to shine a spotlight on injustice and inequality in our healthcare sector.
Which is why I, despite many musings coming from many people who think they're clever, I believe that NHI, if implemented correctly, is important because we do need equitable healthcare. And but anyway, we can always talk about that at another stage.
I definitely agree with you. It's been a call for the last 25 years to have universal health cover. And I think it takes us to the point of vaccine equity, right?
Yep.
Like, you know, if you and I have medical insurance, will we be in the front of the line for the vaccine, or will somebody who's over 65, who's in the public health sector, or person living with HIV, or a sex worker, or a pregnant woman, I mean, or a healthcare worker, you know, who gets to the front of the queue? And what we've seen, as you pointed out in your introduction, is we're experiencing, in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of a global pandemic, we're experiencing what's called vaccine nationalism. So rich countries, wealthier countries, what we call high income countries, are buying up. It's unprecedented. Are buying up supplies of vaccines that are not even yet approved for use. So basically, they're hedging. It's like a poker game. And, you know, while we may be critical of government, the one thing we should remember is that COVAX is a voluntary initiative. Unfortunately, there are many critiques of COVAX because it's not an elected structure. If you want a seat at the table, you have to put money on the table, which is why I call it a poker game and why it's said. publicly before that drug companies are playing God in the middle of a pandemic. And despite South Africa's inequality and being one of the most unequal countries in the world, we're regarded as a middle-income country. So we're not regarded... We regard it as a rich country that can put money on the table to buy you know, the leftover supplies of vaccine from some of these companies. So it's a bit, you know, I think that that article is a bit maybe in a sense very simplistic, and it gives a very simple version. And of course, we know that that our government has issues around its own incapacity, and parts of it are also captured through what we call state capture. But in this instance, I think we should be putting more pressure on these global nations that are very wealthy, that are part of COVAX, that are insisting on countries such as South Africa and other countries in the global south to actually pay for limited dosages of the vaccine, when in fact we should be regarded as a low-income country. The other problem with COVAX, you know, is that it's largely voluntary. I can't hold anybody there to account as a South African citizen. I can't use my constitution, for example, and the rights in it against them. And, you know, the supplies, most of them have been bought up. So the what I call the leftovers are being given in drips and drabs to some of the low-income countries. And, you know, Slim Karim, Professor Slim Karim, was on a webinar last week, and he showed that with the different initial vaccines that are being, you know, sort of touted as something as promising, and we know that the UK authorities have just given emergency use authorization to Pfizer. Vaccines with different efficacy levels require large percents of the population to be vaccinated. So even buying for just 10% of the population, or having enough money for 10% of the population, is not going to be enough. And so this is why we've asked for detailed plans and the processes to develop these plans, so that we can figure out in a global setting where there's definitely going to be shortages, high prices, limited supplies, we're going to have rationing. And so how do you ration in a country such as South Africa with a two-tiered unequal health system between public and private? Will there be centralized location? We've just learned today that Solidarity Fund is, which is also, you know, not an elected structure, not accountable, not being audited by the Auditor General, despite having public money, is going to get involved in vaccine funding allocations and decisions. So it's a very unclear set of relations, which is complicated by the global system. And we're asking for clarity and for certainty, because when the vaccine does come to market, maybe in 12 or 18 months or whenever, we need to have a plan already where different stakeholders are bought into it, where we all understand the plan and we know why, so that we don't have people who are, you know, last in line unnecessarily, and that those who are most in need are at the front of the queue.
You know, I was making this point earlier. Pravin Gordhan, I've got a lot of respect for, but when it comes to this SAA saga, and when it comes to us being hell-bent on supporting a loss leader under a different name, potentially, with a different shareholder, but with pretty much all the same role players involved that caused us the same... I almost said something else, but that's given us what we've had up until this particular point. We're now seeing billions being put into that airline and healthcare services suffering, budget cuts. And I just can't reconcile myself with that point. What's your take on it?
So, I mean, my personal view, and, you know, I worked as an advisor to a minister in public enterprise, Barbara Olsen, before, so I'm quite intimately familiar with all these SMEs. But my personal view is I agree. I don't think we need to repeatedly bail out an airline. But I think in a time of a recession and an economic crisis, workers had very legitimate concerns about you know, whether they would lose their jobs. And that's why it's difficult when the state runs businesses, because you do have unions that, you know, expect certain arrangements, because they also have the tripartite alliance. I certainly don't think decisions are only motivated by the best financial considerations for the state, and also determined by politics. But you're right. We regard it as a middle-income country, yet we have the highest levels of inequality, yet we are putting billions into bailing out the state, you know, state-owned enterprise like an airline, which I really don't think is part of our developmental mandate, whereas health is. And where it's the purchase of medicines is and the purchase of vaccines is. I mean, you know, just we could have increased the socioeconomic relief to thousands of people who are basically going hungry, right? The reports we are getting around the impact of the lockdown on small businesses, on people who have employed other people, is devastating. I mean, we had a hunger problem before. We now have a hunger crisis. And the one thing, you know, the one thing that can take you out of this pandemic, out of repeat lockdowns, because we have a crisis already, we potentially have a second wave coming, is a vaccine. And this is why, you know, we do not want to be adversarial. We do not want to be litigating against our government. But this is why the public needs access to information about what is the plan. We totally appreciate and understand that the UK, the US, Canada, parts of the EU have bought up supplies, have excessive power. But this is the time where you assert your power. If you're not going to do it in a pandemic, if you're not going to fix the patent laws in the pandemic, if you're not going to complete the medicine pricing framework in a pandemic, then I'm not sure when our government's going to do it.
Well, this is the point. By the way, for those listening, let me just tell people who they're listening to quickly, because they're listening to us having a conversation here. But the head of HDI, the Health Justice Initiative, is Fatima Hassan. As she said, she was also an advisor to Barbara Hogan at the time, so she understands the public enterprises space. But we are talking about equitable access. Now, I make no bones of the fact that I'm a capitalist. I like being a capitalist, right? But there's one thing I do have, which some other capitalists don't, and that is a social conscience. So when you talk to me about an NHI, our healthcare costs a family of four, average, ten times what many households bring home on a monthly basis. And that's a fact. How is that justice? Lorenzo Davids, Community Chest, the CEO, was on this show telling us, he was on Radio Sonogrenza, did the interview, thousands of people phoning him, telling him how hungry they are. Now, you can't divorce health from hunger. You can't divorce health from people's mental state, because these things all translate. COVID, right, has depressed a lot of people out there. There's a lot of anxiety. And what happens? People end up eating more. People end up drinking. People end up doing lots of things which then ultimately affects their bodies, and that becomes a physical healthcare problem. So while I say I'm a capitalist, I give a damn about people, and I think we all need to care about the most disadvantaged around us as much as we care about our cats and our dogs and everything else we make a fuss about, and that's good. We also have to care about the most vulnerable, who don't even have a hope in hell to have even a tenth or a hundredth of what we have in this country. So this is why I'm liking this discussion with Fatima Hassan. I think it's an important discussion to have. But where to from here, Fatima? You know, you talk about not wanting to litigate against government, but if you have to, you will. When do you draw that line?
So, you know, we're hopeful that government will respond. We have asked them for a response within the next few days. But I think the way the world is moving and the way this pandemic is moving, the goalposts are shifting so fast that we can't get certainty around a rational, fair, equitable plan and a process to develop that plan. Then we will have to take the necessary steps. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned the point about being a capitalist and still having a social justice conscience. And I think that is the point, right? When it comes to health and housing and food, you can't commodify that. Yep. And the problem that we have with COVID globally, and that's what it showed, or the fault line that it exposed, is that health became commodified. It became like a car or a handbag or some jewelry, which it's not. Yeah. And so when you ask for health justice, you know, a lot of people find that quite difficult to get their heads around, because they want to live in a system where profit is possible in healthcare. And that's the problem currently in South Africa. Absolutely. With our healthcare system, where you talked about your monthly budget for providing healthcare. You pay more for the same medicine in the private sector than the state is getting it on a public tender.
Yeah.
There's no reasonable justification for that.
Yeah, No, absolutely. It's a bit like Blinken Security Companies. But anyway, Fatima, great chatting to you. Where do we find HJI, by the way?
It's healthjusticeinitiative.org.za, and we're on Twitter, and we're on Instagram and Facebook. And thanks for the opportunity, Kino.
Anytime. I love what you guys are doing. So thank you very much for your time. Fatima Hassan, the head of the Health Justice Initiative.